Upper Audio presents Thud by Terry Pratchett, performed by Stephen Briggs. There was an old military saying that Fred Colon used to describe total bewilderment and confusion. An individual in that state, according to Fred, couldn't tell if it was arsehole or breakfast time. This had always puzzled Vimes. He wondered what research had been done. Even now, with his mouth tasting of warmed over yesterday and everything curiously sharp in his vision, he thought he'd be able to tell the difference. Only one was likely to include a cup of coffee, for a start. He had one now, ergo, it was breakfast time. Actually, it was near lunchtime, but it would have to do. The troll, known to everyone else, and occasionally to himself as Brick, was seated in one of the big troll cells, but in deference to the fact that no one could decide if he was a prisoner or not, the door had been left unlocked. The understanding was that, provided he didn't try to leave, no one would stop him leaving. Brick was engulfing his third bowl of mineral-rich mud that, to a troll, was nourishing soup. "What is scrape?" Vimes said, leaning back in the room's one spare chair and staring at Brick as a zoologist might eye a fascinating but highly unpredictable new species. He'd put the stone ball from the mysterious Mr. Shine on the table by the bowl to see if it got any reaction, but the troll paid it no attention.
"Scrape? You don't see it much these days now that slab's so damn cheap," rumbled Detritus, who was watching his new find with a proprietorial air, like a mother hen watching a chick who was about to leave the nest. "It what you scrape up, see? It few bits of drain-grade slab boiled up in a tin with alcohol and pigeon droppings. It what the street trolls make when they is short of cash and, what is it they short of, Brick?" The moving spoon paused.
"They's short of self-respect, Sergeant," he said, as one might who'd had the lesson shouted into his ear for 20 minutes.
"By Iowa, got it," said Detritus, slapping the skinny Brick on the back so hard that the young troll dropped his spoon into the steaming gloop. "But this lad has promised me all that is behind him, and he is damn straight now on account of having joined my one-step program. Ain't that so, Brick? No more slab. Scrape, slice, slide, slunky, slurp, or sliver for this boy, right?"
"Yes, Sergeant," said Brick obediently. "Sergeant, why do the names of all troll drugs start with S?" said Vimes.
"Ah, it make them easier to remember, sir," said Detritus, nodding sagely.
"Ah, of course, I hadn't spotted that," said Vimes. "Has Sergeant Detritus explained to you why he calls it a one-step program, Brick?"
"'Cause he won't let me put a foot wrong, sir," said Brick, as if reading it off a card.
"And Brick here's got something else to say to you, haven't you, Brick?"
said the maternal Detritus.
"Go on, tell Mr. Vimes."
Brick looked down at the table.
"Sorry I tried to kill you, Mrs. Vimes," he whispered.
"Well, we'll see about that, shall we?" said Vimes, for something better to say. "By the way, I think you meant Mr. Vimes, and I prefer it if only the people who fought alongside me call me Mr. Vimes."
"Well, technically, Brick has fought," Detritus began,
but Vimes put down his coffee mug firmly. His ribs were aching.
"No, in front of is not the same thing as alongside, Sergeant," he said. "It really isn't."
"Not really his fault, sir. It was more a case of mistaken identity," Detritus protested.
"You mean he didn't know who I was?" said Vimes. "That didn't seem to—"
"No, sir. He didn't know who he was, sir. He thought he was a bunch of lights and fireworks. Trust me, sir. I reckon I can make something of this one, please. Sir, he was out of his brain on Big Hammer, and still he was walking about."
Vimes stared at Detritus a moment, and then looked back at Brick.
"Mr. Brick, tell me how you got into the mine, will you?" he said.
"I told the other policeman," Brick began. "Now you tell Mr. Vimes," growled Detritus. "Right now."
It took a little while, with pauses for bits of Brick's mind to shunt into position, but Vimes assembled it like this. The wretched Brick had been cooking up scrape with some fellow gutter trolls in an old warehouse in the maze of streets behind Park Lane, had blundered down into the cellar looking for a cool place to watch the display, and the floor had given way under him. By the sound of it, he'd fallen a long way, but to judge by the troll's natural state, he probably floated down like a butterfly. He'd ended up in a tunnel,
like a mine, you know, with all wood holding a roof up,
and had wandered along it in the hope that it led back to the surface or something to eat. He didn't start to worry until he came out into a far grander tunnel, and the words dwarfs finally reached a bit of his brain with nothing to do but listen. A troll in a dwarf mine goes on the rampage. It was one of those givens like a bull in a china shop, but Brick seemed refreshingly free of hatred toward anyone, provided the world supplied enough things beginning with S to make his head go bzzz, and the city had no shortage of these, he didn't much care about what else it did. Brick, down in the gutter, had even dropped below that horizon. No wonder Chrysophrase's shakedown hadn't corralled him. Brick was something you stepped over. It might even have occurred to Brick, standing there in the dark with the sound of dwarf voices in the distance, to be afraid. And then he'd seen, through a big round doorway, one dwarf hold up another and hit it over the head. It was cave gloomy, but trolls had good night vision, and there were always the worms. The troll hadn't made out details and was not particularly interested in seeing any. Who cared what dwarfs did to one another? So long as they didn't do it to him, he didn't see a problem. But when the dwarf that had done the bashing started to shout, then there was a problem large as life. A big metal door right by him had slammed open and hit him in the face. When he peered out from behind it, it was to see several armed dwarfs running past. They weren't interested in what might be behind the door, not yet. They were doing what people do, which is to run toward the source of the shouting. Brick, on the other hand, was only interested in getting as far away from the shouting as possible, and right here there was an open door. He took it and ran, not stopping until he was out in the fresh night air. There had been no pursuit. Vimes wasn't surprised. You needed a special kind of mind to be a guard. It was one that was prepared to be in a body that stood and looked at nothing very much for hours on end. Such a mind did not command high wages. Such a mind, too, would not be likely to start a search by looking in the tunnel it just arrived by. It would not be the sharpest knife in the drawer. And so, aimlessly, without intent, malice, or even curiosity, a wandering troll had wandered into a dwarf mine, spotted a murder through a drug-addled perception, and wandered out again. Who could plan for anything like that? Where was the logic? Where was the sense? Vimes looked at the watery, fried-egg eyes, the emaciated frame, the thin dribble of God's new watch from a crusted nostril. Brick wasn't telling lies. Brick had enough trouble dealing with things that weren't made up.
"Tell Mr. Vimes about the big wuk-wuk," Detritus prompted.
"Oh, yeah," said Brick. "There was this big wuk-wuk in the cave."
"I think I'm missing a vital point here," said Vimes.
"A wuk-wuk is what you make with charcoal and nitre and slab," said the sergeant. "All rolled up in paper, like a cigar, you know. He said it was—"
"We called them wuk-wuks because they looked like, you know, a wuk-wuk," said Brick, with an embarrassed grin.
"Yes, I'm getting the picture," said Vimes wearily. "And did you try to smoke it?"
"No, sir, it was big," said Brick. "All rolled up in their cave, just by the manky old tunnel I fell into."
Vimes tried to fit this into his thinking and left it out for now. So, a dwarf did it, right. And right now he believed Brick, although a bucket of frogs would make a better witness. No sense in pushing him further right now, anyway. "Okay," he said. He reached down and came up with the mysterious stone that had been left on the floor of the office. It was about 8 inches across, but curiously light. "Tell me about Mr. Shine, Brick. Friend of yours?"
"Mr. Shine is everywhere," said Brick fervently. "Him diamond."
"Well, half an hour ago he was in this building," said Vimes. "Detritus?"
"Sir,"
said the sergeant, a guilty look spreading across his face. "What do you know about Mr. Shine?" said Vimes.
"He a bit like a troll god," Detritus muttered.
"Don't get many gods in here as a rule," said Vimes. "Someone's pinched the secret of fire. Have you seen my golden apple? It's amazing how often we don't get that sort of thing in the crime book. He's a troll, is he?"
"Kind of like, a king,"
said Detritus, as if every word was being dragged from him.
"I thought trolls didn't have kings these days," said Vimes. "I thought every clan ruled itself."
"Right, right," said Detritus. "Look, Mr. Vimes, Mr. Shine, okay? We don't talk about him much."
The troll's expression was a mixture of misery and defiance. Vimes decided to go for a weaker target.
"Where did you find him, Brick? I just want to—"
"He came calling to help you," snarled Detritus. What are you doing, Mr. Vimes? Why you go on asking questions? With the dwarfs who have pussy feet, must not upset them. Oh, no. But what you do if they was trolls, eh? Kick down the door, no problem. Mr. Shine bring you brick, give you good advice, and you talk like he being a bad troll. I'm hearing now where Captain Carrot, he telling the dwarfs, he's the two brothers. Do you think that make me happy? We know that lying old dwarf lie, yeah? We groan at it lying, yeah? You want to see Mr. Shine, you show humble, you show respect, yeah?
This is Coombe Valley again, thought Vimes. He'd never seen Detritus this angry, at least at him. The troll was just there, reliable and dependable. At Coombe Valley, two tribes had met and no one blinked.
I apologize, he said, blinking.
I didn't know. No offense was meant.
Right,
said Detritus, his huge hand thumping on the table. The spoon jumped out of Brick's empty soup bowl. The mysterious rock ball rolled across the table with an inevitable little trundling noise and cracked open on the floor. Vimes looked down at two neat halves.
It's full of crystals, he said.
Then he looked closer. There was a piece of paper in one broken, glittering hemisphere. He picked it up and read, Pointer and Pickles, Crystals, Minerals and Tumbling Supplies, Number 3, 10th Egg Street, Ankh-Morpork. Vimes put this down carefully and picked up the two pieces of the stone. He pushed them together, and they fitted with the merest hairline crack. There was no sign that any glue had ever been used. He looked up at Detritus.
"Did you know that was going to happen?" he said.
"No," said the troll. "But I think Mr. Shine did."
"He's given me his address, Sergeant."
"Yeah, so maybe he want you to visit," Detritus conceded. "That is a honour, all right. You don't find Mr. Shine, Mr. Shine find you."
"How did he find you, Mr. Brick?" said Vimes.
Brick gave Detritus a panicky look. The sergeant shrugged.
"He picked me up one day, give me food," Brick mumbled. "He showed me where to come for more. He told me to keep off of the stuff, too, but—"
"Yes?" Vimes prompted.
Brick waved a pair of scarred, knobbly arms in a gesture that said, far more coherently than he could, that there was the whole universe on one side and Brick on the other, and what could anyone do against odds like that? And so he'd been handed over to Detritus, Vimes thought. That evened the odds somewhat. He stood up and nodded to Detritus.
"Should I take anything, Sergeant?"
The troll thought about this.
"No," he said. "But maybe there's some thinking you could leave behind."
"I should be in charge of the mine raid," thought Vimes. "We might be starting a war, after all. So I'm sure people would like to think that someone high up was there when it happened. So why do I think it's more important that I see the mysterious Mr. Shine?" Captain Carrot had been busy. The city dwarfs liked him. So he'd done what Vimes could not have done, or at least have done well, which was to take a muddy dwarf necklace to a dwarf home down in New Cobblers and explain to two dwarf parents how it had been found. Things had happened quite fast after that, and one other reason for the speed was that the mine was shut. Guards and workers and dwarfs seeking guidance on the path of dwarfdom had turned up to be met with locked doors. Money was owing, and dwarfs got very definite about things like that. A lot of the huge body of dwarf law was about contracts. You were supposed to get paid. No more politics, Vimes told himself. Someone killed four of our dwarfs. Not some crazy rabble-rouser, and left them down there in the dark. I don't care who they are, they're going to be dragged into the light. It's the law. All the way to the bottom, all the way to the top. But it's going to be done by dwarfs. Dwarfs will go to that well and dig out that mud again and bring up the proof. He walked into the main office. Carrot was there, along with half a dozen dwarf officers. They looked grim.
All set, said Vimes.
Yes, sir. We'll meet the others at Empirical Crescent. You've got enough diggers?
All dwarfs are diggers, sir, said Carrot solemnly. There's timber on the way and winching gear too. Some of the miners joining us helped dig that tunnel, sir. They knew those lads. They're a bit bewildered and angry.
I'll bet. They believe us then, do they? Said Vimes.
More or less, sir. If the bodies aren't there, though, we're going to have some explaining to do.
Very true. Didn't your lads know what they were digging for?
No, sir. They just got orders from the Dark Dwarfs, and different squads dug in different directions. A long way in different directions. As far as Money Chap Lane and Ettercap Street, they think.
That's a big slice of the city.
Yes, sir. But there was something odd.
Do go on, Captain, said Vimes. We're good at odd.
Every so often, everyone had to stop work, and the foreign dwarfs listened at the walls with a big, thing like an ear trumpet. Sally found something like that when she was down there.
They were listening. In soggy mud.
Listening for what, singing worms?
The dwarfs don't know, sir. Trapped miners, they thought. I suppose it makes sense. A lot of the digging is through old stonework, so I suppose it's possible that other miners could be trapped somewhere that's got air.
Not to last for weeks, though, surely.
And why dig in different directions?
It's a puzzle, sir, there's no doubt about it. But we'll get to the bottom of it soon enough. Everyone's very keen.
Good. But play down the watch side, will you? This is a bunch of concerned citizens trying to find their loved ones after a reported mining disaster, okay? The watchmen are just helping them out.
You mean, remember I'm a dwarf, sir?
Thank you for that, Carrot. Yes, exactly, said Vimes. And now I'm off to see a legend with a name like a can of polish.
As he went out, he noticed the summoning dark symbol. The Pussycat Club drinks menu had been put with some care on a shelf by the window, where it got maximum light. It glowed. Maybe this was because Frosted Hot Lips Rose had been designed to be seen across a crowded bar in poor light, but it seemed to float above the oh-so-funny sticky cocktail names like Just Sex, Pussy Galore, and No Brainer, making them look faded and unreal. Someone, several ones by the look of it, had lit candles in front of it for when night came. It mustn't be kept in the dark, Vimes thought. I wish I wasn't. Pointer and Pickles was dusty. Dust was the key note of the shop. Vimes must have passed it 1,000 times. It was that kind of shop, the kind you walked past. Dust and dead flies filled the little window, which nevertheless offered dim views of large lumps of rock covered with dust beyond. The bell over the door gave a dusty jangle as Vimes entered the gloomy interior. The noise died away, and there was a definite feeling that this marked the end of the entertainment for today. Then a distant shuffling was born in the heavy silence. It turned out to belong to a very old woman who appeared at first sight to be as dusty as the rocks she, presumably, sold. Vimes had his doubt even about that. Shops like this one often looked upon the selling of merchandise as, in some way, a betrayal of a sacred trust. As if to underline this, she was carrying a club with a nail in it. When she was close enough for conversation, Vimes said, "I've come here to—"
"Do you believe in the healing power of crystals, young man?"
snapped the woman, raising the club threateningly.
"What? What healing power?" said Vimes. The old woman gave him a cracked smile and dropped the club.
"Good," she said. "We like our customers to take their geology seriously. We've got some cholite in this week."
Good, but in fact,
it's the only mineral that travels backwards in time, you know."
"I'm here to see Mr. Shine," Vimes managed.
"Mr. Roo,"
said the old woman, putting a hand to her ear.
"Mr. Shine," said Vimes, confidence already draining out of him.
"Never heard of him, dear."
He gave me this," said Vimes, showing her the two pieces of geode.
"Amethyst crystals, very nice specimen. I'll give you $7,
said the old woman.
"Are you Pickles or Pointer?" said Vimes, as a last resort.
"I'm Miss Pickles, dear. Miss Point—"
She stopped. Her expression changed, became slightly younger and considerably more alert.
"And I'm Miss Pointer, dear," she said. "Don't worry about Pickles. She just runs the body when I've got other things to do. Are you Commander Vimes?"
Vimes stared.
"Are you telling me you're two people? With one body?"
"Yes, dear. It's supposed to be an illness, but all I can say is we've always got along well. I've never told her about Mr. Shine. Can't be too careful. Come this way, do." She led the way through the dusty crystals and slabs into the back of the shop, where there was a wide corridor lined with shelves. Crystals of all sizes sparkled down at him.
"Of course, trolls have always been of interest to geologists, being made of metamorphorical rock," said Miss Pointer, Miss Pickles, conversationally. "You're not a rock hound yourself, Commander?"
"I've had the occasional stone thrown at me," said Vimes. "I've never bothered to check what kind it was."
"Ha! Such a shame we're on loam here," said the woman, as the sound of quiet voices drew nearer.
She opened a door and stood aside. "I rent them the room," she said. "Do go in." Vimes looked at the top few treads of a flight of stairs heading down.
"Oh, goody," he thought. "We're going underground again."
but there was a warm light coming up, and the voices were louder. The cellar was large and cool. There were tables everywhere, with a couple of people at each one bent over a checkered board. A games room. The players were dwarfs, trolls, and humans, but what they had in common was concentration. Unconcerned faces glanced towards Vimes, who had paused halfway down the stairs, and then looked back to the game at hand. Vimes continued down to floor level. This had to be important, right? Mr. Shine had wanted him to see it. People. Men, trolls, dwarfs, playing games. Occasionally, a couple of players would look up at one another, share a glance, and shake hands. Then one of them would go off to a new table.
"What do you notice, Mr. Vimes?"
said a deep voice behind him. Vimes forced himself to turn slowly. The figure sitting in the shadows beside the stairway was shrouded entirely in black. He looked a good head taller than Vimes.
"They're all young," he ventured, and added, "Mr. Shine?" "Exactly. More youngsters tend to come along in the evenings, too."
The glare faded a little. Vimes risked opening his eyes a bit, and made out a hand, every flexing finger sparkling like a prism. The players glanced up, but they'd seen this before.
"Frost forms quite quickly," said Mr. Shine.
When Vimes dared to peek, the hand glittered like the heart of winter.
"You're hiding out from jewellers," he managed, taken aback. "Ha! In fact, this city is indeed a very good place for people who don't wish to be seen, Mr. Vimes. I have friends here, and I have talents. You'd find me quite hard to see if I wished to be unseen. I am also, frankly, intelligent, and intelligent all the time. I don't need the Pork Futures warehouse. I can regulate the temperature of my brain by reflecting all heat. Diamond trolls are very rare, and when we do appear, kingship is our destiny."
Vimes waited. Mr. Shine, who was now pulling his glove back on, appeared to have an agenda. The wisest thing was to let him talk until it all made sense.
"And do you know what happens when we become kings?" said Mr. Shine, now safely shrouded once more.
"Coombe Valley?" Vimes suggested.
"Well done. The trolls unite, and we have the same tired old war followed by centuries of skirmishing. That is the sad, stupid history of the trolls and the dwarfs. And this time Ankh-Morpork will be caught up in it. You know that the troll and dwarf population here has grown enormously under Vetinari."
"All right, but if you're king, can't you just make peace?"
"Just like that. It'll need much more than that."
The hood of the robe shook sadly.
"You really know very little about us, Mr. Vimes. You see us down on a plane shambling around, talking like this. You don't know about the history chant, or the long dance, or stone music. You see the hunched troll dragging his club. That's what the dwarfs did for us long ago. They turned us, in your minds, into sad, brainless monsters, Commander. And in the meantime, shall we play a little game?"
Mr. Shine picked up a box by his chair and upended it over the table.
"This is Thud, Mr. Vimes," he said, as little stone figures bounced over the board. "Dwarfs versus trolls. 8 trolls and 32 dwarfs, forever fighting their little battles on a cardboard Coombe Valley."
He began to place the pieces, black-gloved hands moving with untrollish speed. Vimes pushed back his chair.
"Nice to meet you, Mr. Shine, but all you're giving me is riddles and—"
"Sit down, Commander."
The quiet voice had a schoolteacher harmonic to it that folded Vimes's legs under him.
"Good," said Mr. Shine. 8 trolls, 32 dwarfs. Dwarfs always start. A dwarf is small and fast and can run as many squares as possible in any direction. A troll, because we're stupid and drag our clubs, as everyone knows, can only move 1 square in any direction. There are other types of moving, but what do you see so far?"
Vimes tried to concentrate. It was hard. This was a game, it wasn't real. Besides, the answer was so obvious that it couldn't be the right one.
"It looks like the dwarfs must win every time," he ventured.
"Ah, natural suspicion, I like that. In fact, among the best players, the bias is slightly in favour of the trolls," said Mr. Shine. "This is largely because a troll can, in the right circumstances, do a lot of damage. How are your ribs, by the way?"
"All the better for your asking,"
said Vimes sourly. He'd forgotten them for 20 blessed minutes. Now they ached again.
Good. I'm glad Brick has found a Tritus. He has a good brain if he can be persuaded to stop frying it every half an hour. Back to our game. Advantages to either side do not matter, in fact, because a complete game consists of two battles. In one, you must play the dwarfs. In the other, you must play the trolls. As you may expect, dwarfs find it easy to play the dwarf side, which needs a strategy and mode of attack that comes easy to a dwarf. Something similar applies to the trolls. But to win, you must play both sides.